fear of being redundant, I would still like to say again how appreciative that I am for those who have chosen to visit with us tonight. We are indeed honored by your presence. Somebody from a long way off with us today. Good to see Amanda and the girls here. See if we can do anything to keep her here. You want to try that? Good to have you here. Good to have the newlyweds with us, Craig and Courtney. Congratulations. Wish you the very best in your endeavor to be together from here on out. Somebody says it's a life sentence. I don't know. I don't look at it that way. In the fourth chapter of the Gospel of John, Jesus has an occasion there to speak to a Samaritan woman, and the subject quickly turned into a discussion about worship. The woman was interested in where where worship was supposed to take place. She, being a Samaritan, thought that it should take place on Mount Gerizim. Jews, on the other hand, and of course Jesus was, worshipped in Jerusalem at the temple. And so this woman began to ask Jesus about this when she perceived that he was more than just simply a thirsty Jew at Jacob's well. She wanted to know about the correct place of worship. And Jesus answered her in her inquiry and pointed out several things. And I'd like to just kind of note with you what Jesus says in John chapter 4, verse 21 and verses 23 and 24. Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain, that is on Gerizim, or in Jerusalem, that is the temple, Herod's temple in Jerusalem, worship the Father. True worshipers," he goes on to say, "will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and in truth." Now, several things are explained to us in that particular text, and we learn a great deal of vital information. One of the things that we learned is that there's coming a time when there would be no longer any of these religious pilgrimages, whether a pilgrimage to Mount Gerizim or a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. You don't have to take these religious pilgrimages anymore, Jesus said. And he also pointed out that worship is going to be something that stems from a loving heart, the relationship that we have with God. He also pointed out that worship is a command, something that God says must be done. He tells us that worship is also something that is to be done in spirit and in truth. And so while there are a lot of things about worship that we can understand from this particular passage, did you ever notice there's one specific thing that is not addressed by this particular phrase? And that is, what about the day of worship? Are we to worship on Sunday, which is the first day of the week, that is today? Or should we be worshiping on the Sabbath day? You know, a lot of people consider that what we're going to be doing, if we're going to be pleasing to God, is that we're going to be Sabbath keepers. Are we going to be observing the Sabbath day? And should we be observing the Sabbath day? Now, I want to point out a couple of things. I want to attempt to answer this question tonight. I want to talk about whether we should worship on the Sabbath day, or whether we should worship on Sunday, or is Sunday the Christian Sabbath? Was the seventh day of the week the Jewish Sabbath, and now Sunday the Christian Sabbath? Or should we go back to, just all of this is going to try to be answered this evening. But to do so, let me note with you a couple of passages. In the Ten Commandments, in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8, we find that God says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." That is the fourth of the Ten Commandments that God gave. Furthermore, we find out in Exodus chapter 31 and verse 16 that God said, "Therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant." Now, the interesting thing about that idea of perpetual is that it is without end. That's what it suggests. Age lasting. That is, it is to continue. It is to have no end. But now let me tell you something. I'm going to say something that all of us are well aware of. Do you realize that Christians do not observe the Sabbath? We do not keep the Sabbath, and that's just the fact. I don't know of any New Testament Christian that keeps the Sabbath or even remotely suggests that it is a possibility that we should keep the Sabbath. The Sabbath, of course, is on the seventh day of the week. Now, that's not what the word Sabbath means. Sabbath doesn't mean seventh. Sabbath actually means cessation. One is to cease from certain activities. That's what Sabbath means. On the Sabbath day, there is a cessation of activities. A man couldn't gather firewood. A woman couldn't prepare certain kinds of food. There's just certain things you couldn't do on the Sabbath day. You couldn't travel a certain distance because Sabbath meant that there was to be a cessation of work, a cessation of activities on the Sabbath day. But the Sabbath day was the seventh day of the week, even though that's not what the word Sabbath means. On the other hand, Sunday is the first day of the week. And we're gathered together on this first day of the week, and we're gathered together to worship God. Now, there are some in the religious world who observe the seventh day of the week. They are what is often referred to as Sabbatarians. That is, they observe the Sabbath, just like the Old Testament says. One such group is known as the Seventh-day Adventists. And seventh day, of course, is in their name because that's the day they observe. They observe the Sabbath day. Now, the Sabbatarians or the Seventh-day Adventists tell us that the Pope, the Roman Catholic Pope, changed the seventh day of worship to the first day of the week. And that was something that was decreed by the Pontiff. And actually, they tell us, that this decree of the Pontiff is actually the mark of the beast in Revelation chapter 16. And that when they changed the Sabbath worship and then instituted the first day of the week worship, that really means that we and others who worship on the first day of the week and do not observe the Sabbath, that we actually are displaying the mark of the beast. Well, I'll tell you what. I want us to do some serious Bible study this evening. I'm going to give you some information that may help you if you're confused about this. Or it may help you, if you're not confused, to give you some information that can instruct others. And that's what I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to do. Well, the first thing that I want us to consider is who was commanded to observe or to keep the Sabbath day? That's the question we have to answer. Now, if we can get that question answered, then that's going to pretty well go a long way to helping us understand a lot of things that we hear about the Sabbath. Well, I'm going to propose some possible answers to this. Well, in the first place, I'll ask the question. I'm like this little thinker on the screen here who was commanded to keep the Sabbath day. Was Israel? That is, was Old Testament Israel commanded to keep the Sabbath day? Is this something God told the nation or the people of Israel to observe? Is it a Hebrew command? Now, I have a passage here on the board that I want us to consider, and that's the fifth chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, and beginning at verse 1, we read these words. Now, stay with me on this, because we're going to get an answer to our question. Moses called all Israel. Hold on, here we go. Moses called all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them." Now, you follow me on this? Who is he addressing? He's addressing Israel. And he said, there are certain things that you need to be careful to observe. He said, the Lord our God made a covenant with us at Oreb. And of course, that refers back to Mount Sinai. He said, the Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers. That is, this is not something that God instituted before Mount Sinai or Oreb. He said, he did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us. those who are here today, all of us who are alive. The Lord talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. Now, I could go on reading, but I want to drop down now to what's said in verse 12. Because what Moses then begins to do is relate to them what is referred to as the Ten Commandments. And notice what he said. He said, I'm talking to you, Israel. And this is a covenant that God made with you, Israel. He did not make it with anybody before He made it with you, Israel. And He made it with me, or made it with you, when He spoke to us from the fire on the mountain. Now, among the commands that were given, and Moses then begins to reiterate what we call the Ten Commandments, is verse 12. And he said, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. What we find out? This is something that God told Israel to observe. If you go back to chapter 4 and in verse 13, you find that he even refers to this covenant as the Ten Commandments. He said, I give you, Israel, the Ten Commandments. So, did God demand Israel to observe the Sabbath? The answer to that question is yes. We have evidence of that right here in the text. But let me propose another possible answer to that. Is this a command that God gave all the way back at the beginning with Adam and Eve? Was Adam and Eve then commanded to observe the Sabbath? Now, the passage that we have listed before you is Genesis 2 and in verse 3. This is after the creation of the world in 6 days. And I believe God created in 6 literal days, 24-hour periods. Then God blessed the seventh day, verse 3 says, and sanctified it, because in it He rested from all His work which God had created and made. And somebody looks at this and says, well, J.R., it seems to me that God ordained the Sabbath day at creation, and that Adam and Eve were commanded to keep the Sabbath day. That's why the Sabbatarians will tell you today that yes, God did away with the part of the law, the ritualistic part of the law, the Decalogue, but He didn't do away with the Sabbath. Because they say it was something that was instituted at the beginning. But see, here's the problem with that. The problem with that is you've got to understand that Moses was writing this many, many years after the event. He's writing this many years after God created. Moses wasn't there at the creation. Moses, under the direction of the Holy Spirit, is recording this several years, centuries after God created. And he's writing this after God had instituted the Sabbath day. And what Moses is doing is explaining the observance of the Sabbath day and why God selected the one that He did. This is past tense. This is the day that God selected. You want to know why? Because He rested on this day. So the answer to that question is no. God did not command Adam and Eve to observe the Sabbath. Did God command Abraham? I can read throughout the book of Genesis that Abraham built altar after altar after altar, but no place do I ever read where Abraham, the great patriarch, observed the Sabbath day. Well, what about, and the answer to that would be no. Well, what about then the Gentiles? Those who are non-Jews, are Gentiles commanded to keep the Sabbath day? Well, you know, Paul said in Romans 3 and in verse 19 that the law is given, or those who are under the law are to keep the law. And of course, we understand that the Gentiles were never given the law. Whatever things the law says, it says to those who are under the law. Romans 3 and verse 19. Go back to verse 1. Romans 3 and verse 1. What advantage then has the Jew? What is the profit of circumcision? He says, much in every way. Well, what is it? Chiefly because to them, the Jew, to them were committed the oracles of God. So the Jew had received the oracles of God, not the Gentile. And the Gentiles are not to observe the law of Moses because it was not given to them. Whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, who were under the law, the Jews. So the answer to that, of course, is no. God had not given the Gentiles the command to observe the Sabbath. Well, what about the church? What about New Testament Christians? Are we to observe the Sabbath? Paul, in writing to the Colossians, told them in Colossians 2 at verse 14 that the handwriting of ordinances, which was the Ten Commandments, that which was written and engraven in stone, he said it has been nailed to the cross. Nowhere in the New Testament do we ever find that one Christian or Christianity or the church has been commanded to observe the Sabbath day. The answer to that is no. Well, now let's put it like this, just in case there's any question about this. Let's pretend that you are a mailman, a mail carrier, perhaps I should say. And you've been given a letter to deliver. Now you look at that letter, you and your little Jeep, it's got the steering wheel on the wrong side. And you've got this little letter, and you see that, and you don't know what's in the letter, but here's what's in the letter. The Ten Commandments. Have no other God before me and so forth. You get down here to number 4, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But what you do see is you see the one it is addressed to. You see on the envelope that it says, to Israel. Now see, we've already studied that. We've already encountered that in Deuteronomy 5 and verse 1. Now you're a mail carrier. And you've got this letter that is addressed to Israel. And you're driving down the road and you begin to encounter several mailboxes. And these mailboxes have certain names on them. Now, which one of these mailboxes are you going to put this letter in? Now, remember who it's addressed to. It's addressed to Israel. Well, there's Adam and Eve. Is he going to go in that mailbox? What about Abraham, the Gentiles, the church? Where do you deliver the letter? There's no big shame. And this is the way it is with the keeping of the Ten Commandments and the observing of the Sabbath day. This is to be put in the mailbox that says to Israel. And I've got to tell you, it doesn't take any Einstein or rocket scientist to understand that. Now, I believe there's some other questions, however, that we need to observe and try to answer from the Scriptures as it pertains to the Sabbath. Now, if this was given only to Israel, the question is, then why was the Sabbath given? Why did God institute the Sabbath day? Now, somebody said, well, God instituted the Sabbath day because that was a day upon which He rested. Now, that's not the answer to the question. God chose that day because that was the day that He rested. But why was a day of rest given? That's the question that we need to ask. Why was a Sabbath rest given? And if somebody said, well, it's because God rested on that day, I'm telling you, we've missed the whole point. Because the Bible has a lot more to say about it than that. Let's notice in Deuteronomy 5 once again. Now, God chose that day because that's the day upon which He rested, but why did He give a Sabbath rest? He said to them in verse 15, you remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Why was the Sabbath given? God said, because I delivered you from Egypt. You, therefore, keep the Sabbath day. That's what God said. The Sabbath was given to whom? To Israel. Why? They were in captivity. They were in Egyptian bondage. God said, I delivered you, so what I want you to do is to keep the Sabbath day. But He has more to say about it than that. In Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13, He said, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep. Why, God? Well, He said, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generation that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. So why did God give Israel the Sabbath? God said, I give Israel the Sabbath because I delivered them from bondage, and it is a sign of the covenant between you and me. That's why I want you to keep it. And so therefore we can see then why the Sabbath was given. And it was only between God and Israel. No one else. No Gentile was delivered from Egyptian captivity. The church wasn't delivered from Egyptian captivity. Only the Israelites. And they were the only ones that the Sabbath day was given to. Well, another question about that was the Sabbath then limited? Was there coming a time that the Sabbath was going to be done away? Or was it to last forever? And then was it to just simply be, dovetailed into the church? Was it to go on or was it to end? Two passages, and we looked at one just a little bit ago. In the 31st chapter of the book of Exodus, in verse 16, God said that the Sabbath day was to be throughout their generations. He's talking about Israel. In the 31st chapter of Exodus, this time in verse 13, he said it was to be throughout your generation. Throughout their generation, throughout your generation. And every time that we read about throughout your generation or throughout their generation in the Old Testament, it always refers to the Jewish dispensation of time. And so the Sabbath day was to be a perpetual observance that is without end throughout your generation. You see that? So long as the Jewish dispensation was in place, the Sabbath was to be observed. The Sabbath rest was to be observed. But now notice what is said in the book of Hosea. God in prophecy in the book of Hosea says, I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all her appointed feasts. So God says through the prophet Hosea, yes, there's coming a time when the Sabbaths will cease. And why is that? It is because the Jewish dispensation ended. And when the Jewish dispensation ended, the Sabbath observance ended, you see. Well, I've really answered then my third question. When then did the Sabbath end? And it's like we said, when the Jewish dispensation ended. Paul talks about that. He said in Colossians 2, having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us, and he's taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. That is, at the death of Christ, at the coronation of Jesus as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And so the conclusion of that then would be, so let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths. And what he means by let no one judge you, that is, do not let anyone condemn you by not having dietary restrictions and by not celebrating festivals and by not celebrating new moons and by not celebrating Sabbaths. You see. And I got to tell you, Colossians 2 is the fulfillment of Hosea 2 and verse 11. And that's when the Sabbaths were to cease. I want to notice a couple of passages with you. One was our reading, but before I look at 2 Corinthians 3, I want you to notice what Paul says in Romans chapter 7. He says in verse 6 of Romans 7, but now we have been delivered from the law of Moses, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. Well, Paul, if we're no longer under the law, does that mean that the law was bad? And Paul addresses that. What shall we say then in verse 7? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. Now, what law said you shall not covet? The Ten Commandments. That was part of the Ten Commandments. Paul said it's not a bad, the law was not sin. I learned of sin because of what the law said. But the law was not sin. And he said, the law he's talking about contains the prohibition, you shall not covet. And what did he say in verse 6? We have been delivered from the law. That is, we have been released from that law. Now let's consider again the passage that Jim read in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Now I want you to notice what Paul says in verse 7. I'm not going to reread all of these verses, but I do want to highlight a couple of things here. Paul said in verse 7, but if the ministry of death... What are you talking about? What he identifies as the ministry of death? What? We don't have to guess. He said, but if the ministry of death, written and engraved on stones, was glory... What did God write and engrave on stone? The Ten Commandments. He said, but if the ministry of death, written and engraved on stones, was glorious, so that the children of Israel could not look steadfastly at the face of Moses because of the glory of his countenance, which glory was passing away. When was it passing away? It was not passing away when Paul wrote this, because it had already passed away. It was passing away when Moses gave it. It was temporary when Moses gave it. It was already passing away. And then he goes on to make a contrast. How will the ministry of the Spirit not be more glorious? For if the ministry of condemnation had glory, the ministry of righteousness exceeds much more in glory. For even what was made glorious had no glory in this respect, because of the glory that excels. For if what is passing away was glorious, what remains is much more glorious. You notice again that phrase, passing away? Therefore, since we have such hope, we use great boldness of speech, unlike Moses, who put a veil over his face so that the children of Israel could not look steadfastly at the end of what was passing away. Over and over again, we find the reference to this that is taken, or that is passing away. It's passing away. At the time Moses gave it, its glory was passing away. And indeed, it passed away. Today we live and serve under the law to Christ, not under the law to Moses. Paul teaches this in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 21. And I know what somebody may be thinking. They may be thinking, well, J.R., you've made a good case for the doing away of the Ten Commandments, in which the fourth, the Sabbath day, was included. The observance of the Sabbath day. Well, does that mean then? Does that mean then that we can go ahead and do all of the things that were prohibited under the Ten Commandments? How about covetous? And how about having other gods before God? How about having idols and so forth? And not honoring father and mother? And not killing? And all of these things. Can we do all of these things now? Since the Ten Commandments, including the observance of the Sabbath day, have been done away? Well, the answer to that is no. We can't do these things, and here's why. What we need to realize is that every one of the original Ten Commandments, every single one of them, is repeated in the New Testament covenant of Christ with one exception. The fourth. The fourth is the only one of the original Ten Commandments not repeated in the New Testament. What's that tell us? It tells us I can't be an idolatrous man. I can't commit adultery. I can't covet my neighbor's goods, his wife. I can't be dishonorable to my parents. I can't do that because all of these commandments have been repeated in the New Testament except the fourth. It's not been repeated. You know what we need to remember according to Paul in Colossians 2 and verse 17, that the law of Moses that has been done away, taken out of the way, nailed to the cross, that law was a shadow of things to come. God did not intend for it to be the reality. It was a mere shadow. And so when God gave the Jews the Sabbath rest, He did not intend for that to be something that is carried on into every dispensation. It was a shadow of something that was to come. What is the shadow? Or what is the figure, or what is the reality of that shadow? What is the body of that shadow? If the Old Testament Sabbath day was a shadow, what did it shadow? Somebody said, well, it shadowed Sunday. Why Sunday then become the Christian Sabbath? Well, the Old Testament Sabbath just foreshadowed the New Testament Sunday. No, that's not what it shadowed. That's not what, you know, it is wrong. It is wrong to call Sunday the Christian Sabbath. That's wrong. Now, somebody may do it in sincerity, but it's still sincerely wrong. Sunday is not the Christian Sabbath. Do you know what the Sabbath foreshadowed? The Old Testament shadow, Old Testament Sabbath shadowed heaven. That's what it foreshadowed. Not Sunday. The Hebrew writer says in chapter 4 and verse 9, there remains a rest or a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And that rest is heaven. The Old Testament Sabbath day foreshadowed the rest that we have with God in heaven. You know, you read in the book of Revelation. In Revelation chapter 14 and verse 13, when John is talking about blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. He said, for henceforth they will rest from their labors and their works do follow them. So the rest that we have is not a one day a week rest. It is the Sabbath rest in eternity with God. That's what's foreshadowed in the Old Testament. But just for a moment, let me direct our attention to the first day of the week. Do you know why the first day of the week is important to us? Not because it is the New Testament Sabbath. Not at all. The first day of the week is important to us because it was the day upon which Jesus rose from the dead. Jesus arose from the dead on the first day of the week. All you have to do is look in passages such as Luke 24 and verse 1 that says, early on the first day of the week, when the women came to the tomb, they found that the stone was rolled away. Then we read on down into the chapter about verses 26 and 27 when Jesus was talking to the two on the road to Emmaus. One of them men identified, and today is the third day. What was the third day? The first day of the week. It was the third day since all of these things took place. Jesus rose from the dead on the first day of the week. It was the day upon which Jesus appeared to the apostles 2 weeks in a row. In John chapter 20, in verse 19, on that same day, Jesus appeared to the disciples, to the apostles, with the exception of Thomas. Then you look on in verse 26 and you find that the next time that Jesus appeared was 8 days later, and that's just a Jewish idiom for the same time next week. On the first day of the week, Jesus appeared to the disciples. The first day of the week is important because this is the day upon which the Lord's church was established. It was established on Sunday, not on the Sabbath day, on the day of Pentecost. And if you look back in the book of Leviticus chapter 23, you can find how you count 49 Sabbaths. And then you add one to Pentecost was always, and that, the word means 50th, Pentecost always, always, even though it was lunar, it always was on the first day of the week. Always. The church was established on Sunday. It was the day that Christians partake of the Lord's Supper, Acts 20 and verse 7, upon the first day of the week. Well, I want to tell you something. These churches who have no regard for the authority of Christ easily and casually just set aside Sunday as the day of observance of the Lord's Supper, move it to the Jewish Sabbath, and have the Lord's Supper on Sunday. That is resurrecting things under the law, something for which we have no authority. New Testament Christians observed the Lord's Supper in commemoration of the death of Christ, and they did so on Sunday. They did so on the first day of the week, so says your Bible. It is also the day that Christians contribute to a common treasure. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. And upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered. You know, I heard about a church down in Bowling Green. They're sort of ashamed of taking up a collection. They decide that what they want to do is not pass the plate in front of everybody because they don't want anybody to be ashamed of this. And so what they do, they set it up somewhere in the foyer or down the hall somewhere, and they let you come in and kind of sneak around and drop in some money. Why would we want to do that? It's part of New Testament worship. It's something that the early Christians did, and they did it on the day that the Lord was raised, on the first day of the week. That's why we observe the first day of the week, not because it's the Christian Sabbath. The Christian Sabbath is the eternal rest that we'll have with God in heaven. I'll tell you something else about the first day of the week. It is the day the Lord has made. I know in Psalms 118 and verse 22 and through 24, you know, we read, this is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And we just make that a general application. Every good day, we say, is the day that the Lord has made. We wake up in the springtime and we hear the birds chirping and we see the sun coming up. We're feeling good and we say, well, you know, this is the day that the Lord has made. I'll rejoice and be glad in it. And in a sense, that is the day that the Lord has made. But if you look in the context of Psalms 118, especially in verse 22, when it talks about the stone which the builders rejected, this is God's doing and it is marvelous in His sight. This is the day that the Lord has made. He's talking about the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus. That's the day that the Lord has made. And that's why we gather together by His authority. You know, we mentioned there that it's the day that Jesus appeared to the disciples. But you know something? While Jesus was able to say to Thomas and others, look at the prints of the nails in my hand, thrust your hand into my side, we can't do that today. But you know what? Jesus is in our midst as well. Where two or three are gathered together in my name, Jesus said, there am I in the midst of them. And you know something else about that day of worship? That's a day that is not to be forsaken, Hebrews 10 and verse 25. It is something that we are to engage in. Remember what Jesus said to the Samaritan woman, in spirit and in truth. And if our desire is to worship God, then we're going to do it in the exact way that God has revealed, and we're going to do it on the exact day that God has revealed and for the exact purpose God has revealed. So what have we learned tonight? I hope that we've learned that the Sabbath day, along with all of the Ten Commandments, was given only to the nation of Israel. I hope we've learned that they were not to be intended, or that the Sabbath day was not something that intended to go on forever throughout every generation. It ended with the Jewish dispensation. I hope we learned that the first day of the week is not the Christian Sabbath, that our Sabbath rest is in heaven. And I hope we've learned some of the reasons why the first day of the week is important to New Testament Christians. I haven't talked to you tonight about being saved, becoming a child of God. I want to do that right now for just a moment, because if I did not, I would certainly be irresponsible. If you're not a child of God tonight and you believe with all of your heart and soul that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, you have within you the power to become God's child. John said that in John 1, verses 11 and 12. Jesus came to His own received Him not. But as many as received Him, to them He gave the power to become children of God. You have it within your grasp to act upon that faith that you have. Allow your faith to move you to the extent that you repent of your sins, you turn away from them, abandon them, and then confess before heaven and before this body of people your faith in Jesus as the Son of God. And then let us baptize you tonight in water for the remission of your sins, to see you raised to walk in newness of life. Why don't you come home to the Lord this evening if you're an erring Christian? Or come to Him tonight for the first time if you've never done that. Now is a good time because you're thinking about it. All things are ready. Why don't you come? As together we stand and as we sing.